get soft if you wanna get soft with it.
Sometimes you feel you gotta love somebody, and that somebody is you. Sometimes we feel we need to touch somebody, touch somebody.
Get soft if you want to get soft with it.
Howdy, folks, or as we like to call you, softies. Welcome back to Emotional Hangs. This is your, I hope, favorite podcast concerning adult friendship and vulnerability. You know how we do it around these parts. So on the count of three, one, two, three, let's get soft. Dear Kurt Braunohler, I write to you now in this, I believe, fourth installment of our Pen Pal series, as you're up in Montreal doing that movie thing you do, and I'm down here in L.A. doing that groovy thing I do. I hope all's going well, buddy. Kurt, I saw you at Thanksgiving. It was very nice. It was very nice. Spent a bit of time with you and your lovely wife and your lovely daughter, and it was a very, very endearing thing. It was very sweet. We went to a picnic together at our friend Billy and Aaron's house, and it was a great time. It was a great time, and having the kid in tow was really lovely, and seeing her smile and everything was really touching. It was, I gotta be honest, it was one of the few times in my life where I was like, you know, maybe I could have a family. And then I went home and played video games alone and realized that that probably wouldn't be good for the family. It's probably not good to sit on the couch for 4 hours straight playing video games when you have a family. You probably have to be doing family things, like talking to them. I would imagine. I don't know. I've never done it. I've never been there. Regardless, I love your family. I love you. It was great seeing all of you. Sad that it was so brief, but I also know that you're coming back in a few weeks permanently, and that'll be very nice to have you back in tow, as they say. I think this is a good opportunity for us to sort of hit the refresh button and start recording a new series of letters. You know, the last letters, you know, they had, there was a correspondence happening where we were sort of, you know, replying and to things the other guy was saying, and it was a continuous thing from letter one through letter three or whatever it was. By the way, I know you're going to make fun of me again for explaining how pen pals work. But here's the thing, dude. You made fun of me about that. You're like, thank you for explaining how pen pals work. Do you think these kids today know what the fuck a pen pal is? Are you insane? Are you insane? These kids don't even know what paper and pens are. They don't even know what pals are. They only know what followers are. That's all they know. They only know likes. All right. I was trying to bring our young, hip audience up to speed to the way things used to work in our day. So, you know, lay off a little bit. And one other thing I want to respond to. You also made fun of me about, and then I promise we'll start fresh after this. You also made fun of me about the steak thing again with the dog. You're not really getting what I'm saying. I'm saying my dog was sick. I looked in the freezer to see what I could just give him that was plain, and the only thing in the freezer was cheap steak. So I thawed it out and gave it to him. It wasn't like I went to the store and said, my doggy needs steak. I don't do that. And it wasn't like I go to the store and go, my doggy needs steak, but it's got to be cheap steak, or then I look weird if it's not. It's like, I don't do that. I had to give him something, and that was all I had, and it fit the bill, so I gave it to him instead of using it on myself. All right? You know what I ate that night? Alpo! Anyway, all right, let's start fresh now. What's going on? It has been a crazy week, my friend. My dad is in the... I think everything's okay, but he's in the hospital. He had pneumonia, and we thought that he was fine. He'd seen the doctor a few times, and, you know, she'd given him different medicines and things like that. And, you know, it seemed like he was doing okay. And then all of a sudden one day he was like coughing uncontrollably, which, you know, you're pretty much coughing uncontrollably already when pneumonia first hits. But he was really spinning out of control. And he couldn't breathe, he said. So they took him to the hospital. Very scary thing. It's not ever not scary when somebody you love has to get into an ambulance. So he got in. It was frightening. My mom was panicked. You know, he's a 70-year-old man. Pneumonia is not a light thing for when you get into your later years. So, you know, but it also doesn't mean, you know, it's also not, you know, a shut case of, you know, a horrible thing or happening. It's, you know, it can be dealt with, but it's just frightening. So we went to the hospital, and my friend Dana. She's a nurse. She's my friend from back home. I called her and I was like, what do I do here? Do I get on a plane? Like, what do I do? She's like, look, he's probably going to be okay. She was like, but if they put a tube down his throat for breathing, she was like, you better get on a plane immediately. So that was terrifying. So it was like a long wait to find out if they were doing that. They didn't do that, thankfully. But then that was the first, like, okay, I think we're okay here. But then he took like a weird turn while he was in the hospital, and he was having a bad night, and then they had to put him in, bad night meaning he was coughing and couldn't breathe again and all this stuff. So then they had to put him into isolation, because they had to make sure that he wasn't contagious and that anybody coming in wasn't going to make him more sick. So it was like that thing where he had to be in the room alone, and then anybody coming in had to wear a mask and all this stuff. So that was really scary. And then they put a heart monitor on him and all this stuff, which was, you know, which I wasn't even thinking of, not because, you know, not out of carelessness or aloofness. It didn't even cross my mind. And I was talking to my mom one day, and she started crying, and she goes, I'm just worried about his heart. And I was like, oh, well, there's a thing I wasn't worrying about already on top of everything else I'm worrying about. Now I'm worrying about that too. But got through that, took the heart monitor off, got him the IV drugs, got him some breathing treatments. He's coughing way less. He's feeling way better. He could be home as early as, this coming Saturday. Well, that would be last Saturday when all of you hear this, dear listeners, or, you know, Monday, 2 days ago. So, you know, one of those days, somewhere in there, it looks like he will hopefully be coming back home. I'm going out to spend a very long holiday with them over Christmas. Going out a few days before, well, more than a few days before Christmas, and then I'll be out there into January, not mid-January or late January, just early January. But I'm going to do a long stretch because, you know, this last year I've been wrestling with this whole thing of my parents and, like, I live so far away from them, and is that okay? We all have to live our own lives. I realize that, but... You know, how much time do they have left? I mean, 70 isn't exactly old these days, but it, you know, it's not spring chicken age either. And, you know, and you worry. So I thought the, you know, one thing I could do is go home for an extremely long holiday. And it's not like I'm not going to be there the entire time. I'm going to work New Year's Eve in New York City, and I'll spend a couple days up there doing comedy stuff, to give us all a little break from one another, because, you know, look, it's family's family. We love each other dearly, but, you know, after a certain period of time, we'll be at each other's throats. So But I feel good about it. I feel good about that upcoming trip. I'm looking forward to it. I feel like this is going to make for a very special Christmas, and you know, it's certainly making me appreciate my dad in a way that I thought I did, but until this happened, didn't realize I did, if that makes sense. You know, yeah, we have people in our lives, you think you appreciate them, and you think, yeah, I'm showing all the appreciation I should be, and then something happens, and you go, oh my God, no, actually, wow, no, I actually appreciate them this much, and I need to show them this much more, because I'm not, you know, it's not all being translated. So anyway, it's overwhelming, emotionally overwhelming. But I'm hoping he's going to be okay. That was this week, which was really, really crazy. And you were great, Kurt. Kurt, you were sending me the text saying, how's your dad? And love you, buddy, and all that stuff. That helps, man. You know, just having friends that that you can lean on, that really, really helps. So thank you for that, man. And, you know, look, one good thing, we talked about my meds being off the last few months or whatever it was. This week was the first week where they really had, like, sort of readjusted, and I felt like, oh, yeah, this is how I'm supposed to feel. Thank God. I mean, talk about, like, right place, right time. Like, Jesus Christ. If my meds had still been off this week, I don't know how I would have handled all this. You know, I'm not saying I would have walked out into traffic, but having a level head really helped. And it helped not get overwhelmed. It helped me to not get overwhelmed and start thinking the world is a vampire, as Billy Corrigan once said. And despite all my rage, I am still locked in a cage. It just helped me keep my head on straight and be like, look, take a breath. This is life. We got to move through this step by step. Let's hope for the best. And, you know, that's all. Like, just be strong. Don't start worrying about what could happen. Don't worry about what could happen. Just think about the now. And I did that, and it was great. Well, it wasn't great. It was a shitty experience, but I just mean, like, it was a great way to handle the shitty experience. So I'm very, very thankful that on this post-Thanksgiving podcast, which at this point, I guess, was 2 weeks ago, Thanksgiving. But I am very thankful for that. So thank you, Prozac, for all you do for me. Thank you, Kurt, for being a dear friend, somebody I can lean on. Thank you, universe, for giving me a nice family and people I love. And that's about it. I mean, what more can you want? What more can you want? Well, there's one thing more I can want. And I'm going to tell you what it is, Kurt. And you're going to see it when you come over to my place next time, and you're going to say, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because on the last episode, you made a comment about how intense my video game setup was and all the systems. I have purchased another system. It's more of a machine. It's an arcade cabinet. I have purchased a second arcade cabinet. I have the Galaga cabinet. I have also now purchased a Star Wars 1983 arcade cabinet. For you aficionados out there, not the sit-down one. Not the one you sit down in. They made one that you could sit down in like you were in the cockpit of a X-Wing fighter. And that is fucking awesome, that thing. It is awesome. But it is gigantic, and it costs a shitload of money that I did not have. Also, I thought it'd be weird to have a sit-down enclosed video game in my house. Like, especially when you live alone, and like I have to turn to my dog and be like, hey, buddy, I'm going to go sit down in my video game now. I'm going to go crawl inside my machine. By the way, I did not buy this amidst my dad being sick. I bought this a month ago before any of that happened. I'm not a fucking monster as my dad's in the hospital going and shopping for video game cabinets. I bought this a month ago, but the company I bought it from is refurbishing it. So it hasn't arrived yet. It takes a while to get it all cleaned up. But anyway, this video game changed my life. When I was a child, I was 6 years old, 1983. This thing hit the arcades. It blew my mind that you could simulate. If you've never played it, it simulates you. It's a first person flight thing where it's like you're in the cockpit basically of the X-Wing TIE fighter doing the Death Star attack at the end of the first Star Wars movie. In 1983, that was huge. I had never seen anything like that. I don't think anybody had. I think it might have been the first of its kind. Insane. It's all vector graphics, so it's super cool, like neon greens and reds and everything. In fact, I have the tattoo on the back of my arm. I have a Death Star tattoo on the back of my arm. It's the Death Star. It's the depiction of the Death Star from this video game. It's the vector graphic image of the Death Star from this game. And I've had that on my arm for years. And I, for years, wanted to purchase this machine. And there are not many out there for sale. And the ones that are for sale are kind of roughed up and kind of take it as it is. And I found one in my neighborhood for sale from a vendor that was like, we will, for no extra charge, clean it up, fix it up, touch up the scratches, make it look nice and neat and new. But it's still all the original parts. So it is, in fact, collector's item. And I was like, this is supposed to happen. This is like a weird, you know, kismet kind of universe thing happening. So that's coming. By the time you get back from Montreal, it will be in my apartment. I will have the Star Wars 1983 video game arcade cabinet in my apartment. Woo! I cannot fucking wait. I've been calling the guy every 3 days, like, is it ready yet? Is it ready yet? And I was like, I have to stop doing that. But it's, I think it's going to be here. He said if it doesn't come, like, today or tomorrow, it should come on Monday or Tuesday. So, and I'm recording this on a Friday. So if it doesn't come today, Friday, tomorrow, Saturday, it'll come on Monday or Tuesday. And in fact, by the time this airs, I should have it in my possession. I'm getting real worked up just thinking about it right now. It's so awesome. I know you want to make fun of it, right? I know, I can smell it. I know you want to make fun of it. But when you see it, you're going to be like, this is so awesome. This is awesome. This is, fuck it, dude. I can't, I wish I could go back in time to when I was six and be like, hey, little Joe, don't be afraid of me, a grown 40-year-old man approaching you in the mall. It's safe. I just want to tell you, you know that Star Wars game you're pissing yourself about that you keep begging your dad for more quarters for? Guess what? Give it 34 years. It's going to be inside your goddamn apartment, you fuck. And guess where that apartment's going to be? Los Angeles. And guess why you're going to be living in Los Angeles? Because you're a comedian. Can you believe that shit, dickhead? I would be hard, tough on myself. I let myself know as a kid, it's not going to be all roses. Because he hears that, he goes, oh, the arcade machine, I'll be a comedian. Oh, that's going to be, wow, what a charmed life. No, fuck you, young Joe. It's not a charmed life, okay? A lot of misery comes along with this. You've sacrificed a lot. Emotionally, relationships, mentally, financially. So fuck you. It's not fun. But hey, when it's not fun, you can at least go play the goddamn Star Wars arcade game. Yeah, that's right, dude. That's right. Kurt, I think that's a great note to end on. I love you. Hope Montreal's good and can't wait to hear your thoughts on all this and everything else going on. Talk to you later, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Kurt Brownler's side of a pen pal episode of Emotional Hangs. I am recording this in my car Because I have no home anymore, I simply wander the world looking for places to do emotional hangs. This is the last emotional hangs that I will do from an unusual location. I will always be in a studio after this one because I'm losing my mind. Guys, we know the drill. Let's do it. One, two, three. Let's get soft. This is interesting. We've been doing these Pen Pal series because I've been in Montreal. I'm now back from Montreal, but I still have not seen Joe. And he recorded his letter to me was recorded when I was in Montreal. I got back from Montreal 2 days ago. And literally maybe 28 hours ago, I got back from Montreal. Back in Los Angeles, the city of broken dreams. And my God, how happy I am to be back in Los Angeles. I now consider this place home, which is weird because it's a weird place to consider home. It's like considering a airport terminal home a little bit. I don't think I'll be here my whole life, but I do consider it home. If the airport terminal was beautiful with flowers everywhere and a perfect 73 degrees when Montreal is in the teens. Montreal is a small town, and in the wintertime it feels much, much smaller. But it's very affordable. Everybody should go live there. Now, back to this. I, again, still love that Joe is explaining how pen pals work. I'm not going to give him shit about it because he seems very defensive. You seem very defensive, Joe. Okay? You seem still defensive about your weird dog steak? I could give a shit less. Let's put it on the table. I could care less if you feed your dog caviar. I cook chicken for my dog every single day. Because, again, she has a sensitive belly, and she shits all over the place if we don't give her that. So, I understand 100%. See, common ground, Joe. Common ground. That's what it's all about. Also, I'm gonna tell you something. Joe expects me to not care about his video game cabinet. That Star Wars game, I would say it's my favorite old school video game ever. I loved it as a child. I still enjoy playing it. It's got great gameplay. It does look very cool. And I feel like I could play it forever and ever and ever. So I'm looking forward to visiting you, Joe. Not just because you're a nice, fun guy to hang out with, but also because of your material possessions. Welcome to America 2017! World's on fire. That's interesting. Joe didn't mention that in his letter. Southern California is burning to the ground, but in a way, a great metaphor for the entire planet is that around me, within 60 miles of me, there are six wildfires. One is now at 200,000 acres, which is a mind-boggling amount of land. I can't physically imagine it other than to see it from space. That's how I can conceive of how large a tract of land that is on fire. And I can't smell smoke in LA. It's sunny and it's cool, crisp, 68 degrees. I'm wearing a little long sleeve shirt because, I don't get too chilly here in Los Angeles before the sun heats it up. And mere miles away is a inferno of epic proportions, a Ragnarok level apocalypse happening. And we're just twiddling our fucking thumbs over here like nothing's wrong because it doesn't seem wrong. And I think that's a perfect metaphor for the planet in general. That we are essentially destroying ourselves, but in the meantime, it's pretty nice. Pretty nice. It's nice to have a nice warm day in November. You know what I'm talking about? So, feeling pretty dire. Golden Globes came out. nominations today. This is the first time I've had a horse in the race for the Golden Globes, and Big Sick was fucking snubbed. Not a single nomination for fucking anything. I would like to invite the Golden Globes to suck the shit out of my asshole. You can go fuck yourself, you fucking weirdos. You fucking foreign press weirdos. I will go back to writing the Paris New York Times or whatever. I don't even understand how it works. I'm more angry for my friends who I think wrote a great movie and made a great movie. They can go piss up a tree, if that is a saying. I think it is. I don't know. Now, Joe, I'm excited to come over, excited to see you, excited to hang out with you. I don't know if you're away this weekend. Maybe we'll see each other this weekend. Joe mentioned that we did have a nice time at a little picnic. It wasn't really a picnic. Picnics are in parks. I like that Joe said it was a picnic and that he had a fine time. Because I have a different... So it was a barbecue at a person's house. It wasn't like we threw out a red striped blanket in the middle of the park and all ate cheese and wine. This was just a barbecue at someone's house. He makes it seem a lot more al fresco and bourgeois than it was. It was not a picnic. It was a barbecue. Now, that being said, I loved seeing Joe. However, got there chit-chatting with people. You know, we went there together. And just every time I looked over at Joe, angry scowl on his face. I left the party thinking Joe had a horrible time. But and then I hear his side of the letter, and he just had what a pleasant time he had. Every time I looked over, he was just angry, yelling about something, and I honestly thought like, wow, Joe didn't enjoy that, and turns out he did. He really, really enjoyed himself. Another thing I want to just a shout out to an idea. There's a cat walking down the street in a way that seems like he might try and attack the car. You know how cats like kind of slink along like they're stalking you, and it's just like, yeah, you weigh 8 pounds. This is one thing I just want to comment on. A unique experience that I discovered about myself is that if I see a parent on the street with a child that's like similar to the age of my child, and I am with my child, and I'll always like give a what's up, like I'll give a head nod or I'll say hello. If that parent does not say hello back and is not friendly back, I go apoplectic. I go Joe DeRosa level apoplectic. Like it's so insane to me to see a parent and to have another parent, and you're both going through this thing, and you're literally just like, hey, what's up? And you don't get like a hey, what's up back. It's like, that's like seeing someone fucking rollerblading backwards down the street while juggling, and then you happen to be like, you're rollerblading down the street backwards while juggling, and then you happen to rollerblade past another person who's rollerblading backwards down the street while juggling, and then that the insanity that that person seeing someone do the exact crazy thing as difficult and has a very specific set of skills, and not just being like, hey, what's up? We're in the same boat. That's a fucking lunatic. And I yelled the other day. I was just like, hey, what's up? And then they didn't. And I was just like, you're a parent of a child. That didn't make sense at all. But yeah, that's just my latest pet peeve. My latest DeRosa style pet peeve. Then I give Joe shit, but he gets angry. He gets very angry about things. And he sticks with them. You hold on to things, Joe. I want to talk next time because this is going to be, now that we're in the same city, we're going to get together, we're going to chit chat. I want to talk about it, all right? Also, relieved to hear that your dad has come home from the hospital. This is, of course, in your letter you're saying that I'm a good friend because I was following up with you, seeing if you needed anything. But then I realized when I was listening to your letter that I had not followed up in the last week, just because of work got away from me and stuff like that. And so right after I get off here, I'm gonna give you a call, because the having a parent sick is absolutely one of the worst experiences that you can go through. And for anybody out there who's gone through it, and also for Joe, who just went through it, I completely understand. And there's that whole thing of, like, do I just drop everything and, like, go out there right now? You know, because, like, there's a part of you that feels like, I gotta do it. But then there's also a part of you that's like, oh, no, if I, like, do that, is that going to make it seem to the person who is sick like, they told me you were going to die, so I had to come right away? You know, like, because that's, because especially when you're in the hospital and you're sick, sometimes you don't really, you're a little out of it, maybe you're on medication, but then to have someone from across the country just show up in the hospital, that's, to me, I would just be like, oh no, they've told this person that I'm going to die, but they haven't told me yet, you know? And so that's what I always, like, worried about that. And with when my mom got sick, I think she found out in October, and then I was like, all right, just, like, let me know when I should come out there. And then she, in November, it was like 2.5 weeks later, she's like, I want you to come out. And I was like, I'm on the next flight. And I, like, left the next day. But... you know, not everybody has a coherent parent, you know, someone who's not unconscious to be like, should I come out there right now? You know, and you want to be there and support, but also you're like, I have a job. I have to still live and exist. And that's the craziest part. It's so insane that there is not, just like, if you have, like, a regular job, you can be like, okay, I got to take 2 weeks vacation or something and like deal with this. But when you don't have a regular job, it's just like you have the freedom of being able to, like, go out there. But then if you don't work, you just starve. You just eventually just run out of money taking care of a parent. And that it's so insane that it feels like regular life. When you have a parent who is sick, it feels like regular life should not have anything to do with it. There should be a fund for everyone. For, like, it should be a global fund that we all pay into. That's like when you have a parent who's sick, you just get a stipend to just, like, be able to deal with taking care of them. Because everyone has a parent. And everyone's parents die. That's the craziest part. That is the craziest part. There is this, like, fantastic Doug Stanhope joke, which is he has a photograph, and I'm gonna butcher it, but I love it so much. He has a photograph of him kissing his father on the forehead just after his father had passed, and someone took a photograph of it, and he says he keeps it in his wallet. So then when anyone shows him pictures of their newborn baby, he pulls out that photograph and says, well, this is how that ends. It's so true. And I, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, it is the truth of the world that it seems maybe trite or cliche that I merely mention it, but it is a fact of the universe that still shocks me with horror, that the person that you care about the most, or that has meant the most to you in your life, that person will die way before you. And that's if you're lucky. That's the best case scenario, if you're lucky. If you're lucky, your parents die before you. Because the other way around is tragedy times a billion. Where your child dies before you. I guess, here we go. Maybe it was like one or the other, you know, when the dipshit who was putting together the system of life on planet Earth, that's how I refer to a creator, when the dipshit, the ill-informed dipshit who thought it was like a good idea to make squid, It's like, a dildo with 8 snake arms and a parrot's beak for a mouth. And make it like an asshole mouth, too. Anyway, I get away from myself. The dipshit who's putting together life on planet Earth. That's what, I guess that, me, if he had two options, he's like, parents die before kids or kids die before parents. I guess it's better that parents die before kids, but still, it is, it's awful and one of the truly worst things you can go through. That being said, Joe, I just realized that I just jumped right to death. You have a parent who was in the hospital for a little bit, and I have jumped right to end game sort of situation, and I want to apologize for that. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen right now. I mean, it will eventually happen, but it's not happening right now. All of us, I'm saying to all of us, we have to prepare ourselves for these things. This is a fact of life, then it's a horror. I mean, this is the void. This is the void that we stare into in our daily existence. But I do want to say that the one thing that you can find some sort of comfort in is that that people have gone through it before. I am here for you, man, for anything you need. I completely understand. In fact, I'm going to give you a call right after I get off the phone and see if you need anything. Maybe you need a little hard salami, and some cheese and crackers. Because sometimes a little hard salami, cheese and crackers is all you need when you're feeling down. You know, you're just like, I don't want to cook. A little hard salami, cheese and crackers gets me through the day. You know, at least that's how I found it. I found hard salami, cheese and crackers really helped me during when my mom was sick. Also gained 20 pounds, just sadness weight during that time. Real tough to get rid of it, too. But for everyone else out there who's going through a similar thing, my heart is with you. And just know that there, people have your back. There's resources for you, all right? And I'm your resource, Joe. And don't ever forget that. I love you, buddy. I miss you. I know you're going to give me shit that this is 3 minutes less than 20 minutes, but I feel like this is where this ends. Love you, pal. See you soon. Bye.